Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots with Mary Jo Fahey. Tonight, their topic is going to be mysteries in the Eastern Mediterranean, and I know that I will be glued to my computer. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Hi. Great, great, great. It's about 15 degrees here in Manhattan, so we're bundled up, and if we don't have to go out, we're not going out tonight.
I don't blame you at all. And how about where you are, Mary Jo, in Florida?
I was telling Nick it's 60, which
is a lot
warmer, but it's starting to get chilly.
Well, I'm glad that you're
both
okay.
Mary Jo that I'd like to trade temperatures with her, but she refused. She absolutely refused. And to tell you the truth, I do not blame her a bit.
I don't blame her at all either. I'm looking forward to tonight's show, as I always do, and I'll be here in case you need me.
Thank you. Excellent.
Okay, very exciting show. Again, this program is Nick Curto Presents, Connecting the Dots. I'm Nick Curto, your co-host, along with...
I'm Mary Jo Fahey, your other co-host. Together, Nick and I founded Disclosure Network New York. DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th year of providing 2 meetings a month throughout the year. We've had to stop our meetings in person, face-to-face, in Manhattan since the venue we had been using closed due to COVID-19. Until the venue reopens, we now produce all of our meetings on Zoom for our supportive DNNY members.
Our Zoom meetings are held on the 1st and the 3rd Wednesday nights from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and each month throughout the year, this coming the year 2022. And if you'd like to have any of the details to become a supportive member of our group, and I highly recommend that you consider that, please email me and I will provide you with that membership information. I'm going to give you my email address right now, which is NICKNYNY1. And that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, at gmail.com. Again, NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com.
Our motto right from day one is connecting the dots to seek truth. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, paranormal phenomena, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of areas and sources, going deep into these exciting and sometimes misunderstood areas that the mainstream corporate press will very seldom talk about or disclose. In other words, who or what is behind the curtain?
Our members do intensive investigative deep research into these various topics and share that information with our group at our Zoom meetings twice a month and with our internet followers on YouTube. Both carry our recorded DNNY programs. It's a great way to catch up if you missed one of our meetings. Also, please visit our website, which is www.dnny.info. Again, dnny.info.
We also have available to our DNNY members worldwide a daily news blast email service focusing on the most important topics of special interest. By becoming a DNNY member, you will then be connected to our other members, receiving cutting-edge daily news that has never been more intense than right now, plus our meeting announcement details, as well as invitations to special events year-round.
Okay, let's get right to it. Mary Jo, please tell our listeners what tonight's program is all about.
Well, as Hercules mentioned, it's Mysteries in the Eastern Mediterranean. We started our show in January 2020, and it turns out that the Mediterranean is a constant theme. Now, details for all of our meetings are in PDF files or show notes that are available on a public high drive. And Nick has posted that URL on the DNNY list. What I'm going to do tonight is just give highlights. I'm going to go back to January 2020 and just cover just the highlights of what we talked about in our meetings when we did talk about the Eastern Mediterranean. If our listeners want further details, they can look at the individual sets of show notes, but so I'll just be giving kind of a big overview. So in the January 2020 show, the topic was a real biblical flood, and we covered advanced plumbing in a palace on the Greek island of Crete that was 1,000 years old when King Tut was laid in his tomb in 1325 BC. I cited an article written by a Toronto medical doctor named Dr. W.J. Corrigan in the July 1932 edition of the Canadian Medical Association Journal. That show also covered the manufacture of synthetic basalt in ancient Mesopotamia, requiring 1,200 degrees centigrade, which is 2,192 degrees Fahrenheit. For that, I cited a June 26, 1998 article that appeared in Science Magazine. Also, mysteriously, a carbon steel knife was found at an archaeological site called Kamen Kalhohak in southeast Turkey. Now, steel production starts with the melting of iron, requiring a melting point of 1,535 degrees centigrade or 2,795 degrees Fahrenheit. The knife is described in a paper titled Analysis of Iron and Copper Production Activity in Central Anatolia During the Assyrian Colony Period by a Japanese archaeologist named Hideo Akinuma. He's also a metallurgist with Japan's Iwate Prefectural Museum. So it's a mystery how that carbon knife was found at that particular archaeological site. Then in August 2020, we covered Thutmosis III, who is an Egyptian pharaoh. In that show, we covered dwarf and giant-sized animal remains found on Mediterranean islands. Dwarf elephants are on display at a natural history museum in Palermo, Sicily, and miniature donkeys have been found on Sicily and Sardinia, and giant swans have been found in Malta and Sicily. There's a fresco, a wall painting in the ancient Egyptian in a burial site that belongs to what the ancients referred to as a vizier, which is a governor. And this particular fresco has a picture of Egyptian Thutmosis III accepting a dwarf elephant from Minoans. They're known to be Minoans because of their dress. So it suggests that the Minoans were, genetic engineers. Then in January 2021, we did an extra show about the Minoans. Again, we talked about the dwarf and giant-sized animal remains found on Mediterranean islands. And I cited a 2004 article published in the Times of Malta by author Natalino Fennec, who says the swans were found with the remains of 51 species of birds, including the ibis, the heron, the stork, and the bittern. And the swan's bones are exhibited at Gar Dalam Museum in Malta. Some of our listeners, perhaps all of our listeners, know that the ibis is connected with Thoth. It's considered his sacred, one of his sacred symbols. In that same show about the Minoans, I also mentioned the Lycurgus cup, which is made of dichroic glass containing silver nanoparticles and gold nanoparticles, making it appear red when it's lit from behind due to the gold, and green when it is lit in the front due to the silver. The cup is also called a Roman cage cup, and it is thought to have been made in Alexandria, Egypt. Then in May 2021, we did a three-part series on nanotechnology, and the cover of those set of show notes has an Egyptian blue pigment shown in an image of Ramses III, dated 1170 BC, and I cited a June 12, 2014 article published in on the Ancient Origins website titled Egyptian Blue, the Oldest Known Artificial Pigment, and that Egyptian Blue has is made of nanomaterial. In that same show, I also mentioned lusterware pottery found in Mesopotamia. Lusterware is a type of pottery or porcelain with a metallic glaze that gives the effect of iridescence. Lusterware glaze is made with nanoparticles. A book called Optics in Our Time, available online, has a chapter titled Optics in Nanotechnology, with a page containing a close-up of 9th century lusterware from Susa. I cited a November 2020 article about nanotubes and layered sheets in the coating of 6th century pottery found in Keladi, India. The paper was published in a journal called Scientific Reports. Multi-walled carbon nanotubes in a Damascus steel saber were also mentioned in that show. I cited a 2006 paper about the Damascus saber published in Nature, written by a team of 6 German scientists at the University of Dresden. Their paper is titled Materials, Carbon Nanotubes in an Ancient Damascus Saber. I found another article about the Damascus saber published in National Geographic magazine on September 27, 2008, written by a writer named Ed Young, titled Carbon Nanotechnology in a 17th Century Damascus Sword. Ed explains, these Damascus blades were extraordinarily strong but still flexible enough to bend from the hilt to the tip, and they were reputedly so sharp that they could cleave a silk scarf floating to the ground, he says, just as readily as a knight's body. The Damascus blades were used during the Crusades. Ed says a scientist named Marianne Reibold and colleagues from the University of Dresden found nanotubes in the Damascus steel in 2006. He explains that there are so many nanotubes in the Damascus steel and so small, 10 million could fit side by side on the head of a thumbtack. The article describes nanotubes as cylinders made of hexagonally arranged carbon atoms. Nanotubes are considered to be some of the strongest material known, with great elasticity and tensile strength. I also found the lusterware, Damascus saber, and Lycurgus cup, as well as the south rose window at Notre Dame Cathedral, listed as ancient nanotechnology on a government website called nano.gov, created for the U.S. government's National Nanotechnology Initiative, or NNI. Then in May 2021, we did an extra show about artificial platonic solids. In that show, I mentioned electrum, a bimetallic alloy that's mentioned in Homer's Iliad, describing the Trojan War between the Greeks and the defenders of the city of Troy in Lydia. I cited an August 2007 article published by the American Chemical Society titled Electrum, the Gold-Silver Alloy from the Bulk Scale to the Nanoscale, Synthesis Properties and Segregation Rules. The authors say that today scientists are still interested in bimetallic alloys due to applications in nanomedicine. In that show, I also mentioned the Roman dodecahedron. A January 2021 article on the Ancient Origins website calls Roman dodecahedrons an enigma. They're hollow, they're made of a copper alloy, and the function is a mystery. The page says that more than 100 have been found across Great Britain, Belgium, Germany, France, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Austria, Switzerland, and Hungary. Roman dodecahedrons range in size from 4 to 11 centimeters, which is 1.57 inches to 4.3 inches. There's a photo of a Roman dodecahedron in the show notes. Also, I mentioned Paolo Uccello's stellated dodecahedron, which was constructed as a marble mosaic with a ring of hexagonal prisms that exists on the floor of St. Mark's Basilica in Venice. Paolo was born in 1397 and died in 1475. The mosaic is, it's perfect mathematically, and it's amazing that he put this together. The topic in September 2021 was geopolymer slurry. It's a liquid that hardens and looks like marble or other stones. A reddish-purple form is called porphyry, and the word means purple in ancient Greek. I cited a blog post from a site called Science Theory titled Uncovered, The Secrets Behind the Stoneworks of Ancient Masons, published August 10, 2019, and written by a man who uses the pseudonym Corbin Dallas. The blog has photos, and the sculpture that is the most convincing is in Naples, Italy. It's called Disillusion by Francesco Cirolo, who lived from 1704 to 1762. There's a fisherman in the statue covered with a fishnet that would have been impossible to carve. The author says the statues are the work of advanced chemists. I also found a photo of a pyramid-shaped porphyry weight found on Crete at the Knossos archaeological site. The object is in the Archaeological Museum of Heracleion, which is 3 miles from the palace at Knossos where archaeologist Sir Arthur Evans worked. The geopolymer is called ancient cement that is considered more durable than modern cement. This is described in a December 1987 scientific paper titled Ancient and Modern Concretes, What is the Real Difference? Published in a journal called Concrete International. The author is Joseph Davidovitz with the Geopolymer Institute in San Quentin, France. I included an extra set of show notes in this particular PDF file because my original plan for the topic in September 2021 was 11 classical architectural geometries listed in a 2020 blog written by Gunjan Thor Erlandsson, founder of an architectural firm called Thor Architects. I changed the topic to geopolymer slurry, but I included my notes for the original presentation in the PDF. Gunjan lists the following geometries in his blog: the 5 Platonic solids, 13 Archimedean solids, the golden section ratio, the Fibonacci numbers, projected geometry, piling, tessellation, periodic tiling, aperiodic tiling, origami, ruled surfaces, Gothic, and combination. We're working our way to glazed wall tiles at Susa, which hasn't yet been covered in any of our other podcasts. I remembered that the stellated dodecahedron in the floor of St. Mark's Cathedral in Venice is made of tiles. When I did more searches, I found a site that calls the floor tessellated, which is on Gungeon's list of 11 classical architectural geometries. Tessellations are referred to as mathematical art. It is tiling that repeats. Three regular shapes can be tessellated: the square, the equilateral triangle, and the regular hexagon. To illustrate tessellation, Gungeon has a floor plan of the Pantheon in Rome. His blog post is located at thorarchitects.com/classical-geometry. Then we did an October 2021 show, and the topic was nanomaterial found at Akrotiri on the Greek island of Santorini. A January 11, 2014 scientific paper that I neglected to cite in the show notes for that evening is titled "The Blue Color on the Akrotiri Wall Painting, From the Palette of the Theron Painter to the Laboratory Analysis," by Andreas Vatropoulos and Sophia Sotiropoulos, that appeared in a journal published by Aegis Society for Aegean Prehistory. Advanced citywide plumbing has also been found at the archaeological site at Akrotiri, illustrated in a 3D animation shown on the History Channel. This brings us to Susa, which is in Iran. Susa is also known as Shushan. The Greeks and Romans called Shushan Susa, S-U-S-A. It's an ancient city that was the capital of the Persian Empire, or Achaemenid Empire, and residence of the Persian king. The Persian Empire existed from 559 BC to 331 BC, covering the areas of modern-day Iran, Egypt, Turkey, and parts of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Persian King Darius I, also known as Darius the Great, built the palace complex at Susa. I have a story that will tie Susa to King Tut and Billy Graham's daughter, Anne Graham, Lotz. Her married name is L-O-T-Z. Our August 2020 show was about Thutmose III, who was the great-great-great-grandfather of King Tut. I mentioned that I had typed Thutmose III with the word dodecahedron into Google and discovered a reference that says, at Karnak, the relief carvings of Thutmose III show fragments and barrel-shaped pieces of lapis lazuli being delivered to him as a tribute. Lapis lazuli is a very beautiful dark blue gemstone that has a color similar to the Egyptian blue pigment that scientists say contains nanomaterial. Our listeners may recall that nanoparticles are dodecahedral and icosahedral. Diamonds are dodecahedral, which implies that they're synthetic. The two platonic solids that do not exist in nature are the dodecahedron and the icosahedron. Billy Graham's daughter is an evangelical minister who founded Angel Ministries, and she's written 11 books. The letter G in angel is capitalized. A symbol of an open compass surrounded by capital G is a famous Freemason symbol. If you look up the meaning, you'll find that the G refers to geometry as a reminder that everything in existence is erected. I found an article about a lapis lazuli ring her mother gave her. She says the stone is from Susa. The article was published September 8, 2007, in the Houston Chronicle about an upcoming presentation at the First Methodist Church in Houston titled Anne Graham Lotz on Recognizing God's Wake-Up Calls. In the article, writer Barbara Karkabi relays Anne's story about a package wrapped in brown paper that she received from her mother. Inside was a basket filled with tissue paper. After she threw the tissue paper away, she called her mother and learned that there was a lapis lazuli ring in the tissue paper. Anne found the tissue and explained that the ring had been given to her mother by an old friend at the British Museum. The stone was from the palace where the biblical Queen Esther was said to have lived with the Persian king Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is Persian King Darius's son Xerxes. So Xerxes and Ahasuerus, King Ahasuerus, is the same person. When I Googled Susa, I found a Wikipedia page that describes the palace at Susa, built by Persian King Darius I. And at the bottom of the page, in a section titled Gallery, there's a photo of a relief sculpture of Ninhursag with the spirit of the forest next to a seven-spiked cosmic tree of life. Ninhursag is Enki's wife and sister. One of Enki's many alternate names is Osiris, and Ninhursag is Isis. Anne Graham Lotz's story about the lapis lazuli ring is also in her book, I Saw the Lord. I've read that her family likes to read the Book of Esther, which is one of two books in the Hebrew Bible that does not mention God. The other is Song of Songs. In a September 17, 2010 Vanity Fair article titled, Is Palin's Rise Part of God's Plan?, writer Michael Joseph Gross reports that Sarah Palin likes to read the Book of Esther to her daughter Piper at bedtime. The New York Sun newspaper picked up the story about bedtime reading in the May 26, 2011 edition of the paper. Anne has 6 honorary doctorate degrees. 4 are doctorate degrees in divinities, and 2 are doctorate degrees in humanities. Humanities is related to the word humanist. The American Humanist website has a tagline that says, good without a God. The site says that they are advocates for atheists. In 1949, William Randolph Hearst sent a telegram to his editors and said, Puff Graham. Billy Graham was pastor for several presidents, starting with Dwight Eisenhower. Who are the Grahams, and is Anne talking in code? There must be a reason for the capital G in Angel Ministries. Darius' son Xerxes, who married Esther, has a name that begins with the letter X. In our July 31st, 2021 podcast, which was an extra show about Jason and the Argonauts, the Dagon, and Sirius, I mentioned a chapter in a 2005 book by author Tex Mars called Codex Magica, titled Cross Your Heart and Hope to Die, all about the letter X. There's a large X on the robe of Ptah in a wall mural in the tomb of Ramses I at Luxor. Ptah was one of Enki's many names. The SiriusXM website says the X means beyond. I believe the X refers to artificial life. The Cain killed Abel story in the Bible is really about Enki and his brother Enlil. Enlil killed Enki, or Osiris, and he was reanimated. To see an image of the wall mural in the Getty Archive, Google Ptah, King's Chamber, Luxor, and the word photo. I found an Egyptian travel website that says pharaohs were buried with their arms crossed in honor of Osiris. I've read that the Graham family likes to talk about the rising of Lazarus from the dead, probably an artificial version like Ptah. Our October 30th, 2021 podcast about nanomaterial found on the Greek island of Santorini at Akrotiri helps us understand that nanoparticles have existed before the biblical flood. Egyptian blue pigment was found in a wall mural at Akrotiri, an archaeological site with advanced plumbing. Scientists know that Akrotiri was destroyed by a volcanic eruption. In our January 2020 podcast, we covered clues that connect Akrotiri to the biblical flood, including no bodies or valuables found at Akrotiri. Robert Ballard's work with a robotic submersible in the Black Sea. Ballard is an oceanographer who is with the Office of Naval Research. Oceanographers quoted in Science magazine say a torrent equaling 200 Niagara Falls cascaded from the Mediterranean Sea into the Black Sea. Also, a Professor Eric Clemente wrote an article for a 2012 edition of Wired magazine titled, How to Trigger a Volcanic Eruption on Purpose. Eric says, the Greek islands of Santorini is the best location. He explains that you can get magma in a volcano to erupt explosively with the addition of outside water. He says if you know the right ratio of water to magma, it would be self-sustaining until it ran out of water or magma. Volcanic eruptions also occur in locations where the tectonic plates of the Earth meet. An Introduction to Plate Tectonics website with maps shows that the Eurasian and African plates meet near Santorini. Linguist Zachariah Sitchin, who translated the cuneiform tablets found in southern Iraq, wrote a novel called The Lost Book of Enki that describes the flood. In the story, the Anunnaki are ordered off the surface or to Earth's highest elevations. Göbekli Tepe, an archaeological site in southeast Turkey, is 2,575 feet above sea level, and it is filled in with sand from somewhere else. In 1963, an archaeological survey done by Istanbul University and the University of Chicago identified the site as Byzantine. Then in 1994, a German archaeologist named Klaus Schmidt realized that it is 7,000 years older than Stonehenge and much more sophisticated. Klaus Schmidt died mysteriously in 2014, and in March 2018, several websites published articles about outrage concerning cement that was poured at the site. When writer Charles Mann interviewed Klaus Schmidt for National Geographic for an article titled The Birth of Religion, published June 2011, Schmidt said that only 1/50th of the site had been excavated. The fact that it's filled in with sand from somewhere else perhaps means that it was underwater at one time. Now, in April, May, and June of 2021, we did a three-part series on nanotechnology. The first was bioprinting of body parts called bioprinting, which is a form of 3D printing. The second show was ancient nanotechnology, and the third was nanomedicine. We've also mentioned that nanoparticles are dodecahedral and icosahedral, which are the two platonic solids that do not exist in nature. Viruses are icosahedral. In the November 2021 podcast, we covered a large list of diseases caused by icosahedral viruses that were used to kill Native Americans. The width of a human hair is 80,000 10,000 to 100,000 nanometers. The width of a single nanoparticle is 1 to 100 nanometers. DNA has been described as self-assembling nanomaterial. In 2021, the 27th annual DNA Computing Conference was held at Oxford University. The nanomaterial called Egyptian Blue in a wall mural at Akrotiri that was placed there before the biblical flood may have been produced by an advanced group who were responsible for the flood. When the flood water subsided, they returned and used nanotechnology in ancient objects that are listed on the U.S. government website called nano.gov. The following list includes a few others that are not on that website. The first is Egyptian blue, mentioned, that was found on the Greek island of Santorini. King Tut's mask, dated 1324 BC. Ceramic tiles at Susa, the Lycurgus cup, lusterware, the Damascus saber, stained glass at Notre Dame Cathedral, and stained glass at Chartres Cathedral. The palace at Susa turned up in a May 2021 scientific study titled Reflective Coloration from Structural Plasmonic to Disordered Polarizonic, describing color generated by nanocomposites that outperforms conventional paint in terms of durability, recyclability, and environmental friendliness. The paper's figure one contains images of what authors call historical objects, such as King Tut's mask, the tiles at the Palace of Susa showing the Susian guards, and the Lycurgus cup. The paper's figure two shows an exterior and interior image of the rose window at Chartres Cathedral. The exterior image shows stained glass in the reflection mode where the colors are not visible, and the interior image shows vivid colors of the stained glass through what is called the transmission mode. The title of the paper I just described is Reflective Colorization from Structural Plasmonic to Disordered Polarizonic. In part two of our two-part series on artificial intelligence in April 2020, I mentioned that Princeton's PPPL, or Princeton's Plasma Physics Laboratory, has a website that says the school's plasma fusion reactor is used for nanosynthesis at lower temperatures. I wondered if the word plasmon in the paper that I just described was related to plasma. I typed the following question into Google. Are plasmons produced thermodynamically? The articles that were returned confirmed that plasmons are produced thermodynamically. In other words, it's particle physics. Plasmons are also bosons. The article was published by Wiley, and two of the authors are with Aalto University in Espoo, Finland, which has a plasma fusion reactor in a city that has a population of 272,000 people. So that's as much as I have for tonight's show.
Well, Mary Jo, that's a lot. You've connected the dots unbelievably. Oh, my goodness.
And
I've got some notes here.
There's a lot of nanotechnology.
Yeah. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Which we've
and
never
the fact that,
been told about. We've never been
told
about this ancient stuff, no.
And also the fact that you pointed out that the nanotechnology wasn't in just one area, but in many separate areas of our planet that was going on. I think that alone blows my mind, that how did this technology get around to other major cities?
I know Hercules is listening. You know, you said something the other day, and I thought about it when I was preparing for this show, and that is this kind of thing is often called mythology. Instead of, it's not, they don't consider it real.
It's Hercules. In fact, it is, right? This is real.
It is real, but they like to tuck it under the word myth or mythology.
Right. Why is that? Why would they want to do that?
I think to throw us off, or to make us think that it's, you know, fiction, or, you know, it's not real.
Right. I would think so, and that really isn't true. So
right.
It's just, yeah, it's something to really re-examine and to rethink, because a lot of these labels that are put on historic subject matter can lead you to think that it's all stories made up somewhere by somebody, and in mm-hmm. fact, it's reporting what really was there. So you have to rethink it.
Exactly. That's why I like to find these scientific articles, which are written and considered to be very, you know, they have a lot of weight because,
oh, yeah.
They're in our National Archive they're in the National Archive of Medicine, or the National Library of Medicine, and there's 25 million scientific studies, and you can't argue with that stuff really, because you know they're very very well respected publications.
Documented and proven, and so that's the facts, and you can't argue with the proven facts. So
it's kind of,
again,
it's,
you
it
have
would
to then
kind of hard,
rethink.
It would be very hard to argue with that stuff, with these scientists.
Absolutely,
there's so many of them, and you can always usually find more than one scientific study that's basically, you know, talking a lot about the same thing or the same subject. So it kind of reinforces the fact that this is real information. It's not anything that is called fringe, or, you know, it's something that someone made up. This is very real.
You have to keep your mind open here, because we have to sometimes totally rethink what we thought we knew that is not true. One of the things you mentioned that was interesting is the depiction of very unusually small animals and birds, or sometimes very large animals and birds, way, way more than what we would call the natural measurement of them. And I'm just wondering, do you have any idea what the purpose of that would be, to engineer birds and animals to be either very, very large or incredibly miniature? What would that be about?
I think they were just experiments that,
okay,
you know, turned up some changes in the animal size. I think that
just
they
to
were
see
genetic.
If they could do it?
Well, the Minoans are in this wall painting, delivering a miniature elephant to Moses, and the tomb belongs to what is known as a vizier, which is an Egyptian word for governor, and it is thought that the group that is delivering the miniature elephant are Minoans, and they are the advanced culture that Hercules has talked about quite a bit.
And that's right.
They're the group that had this advanced plumbing on the island of Crete at the palace.
Also amazing.
That's
absolutely
yes.
amazing. When you said that, I thought, really? That advanced then? It's incredible.
It's that old, and they had advanced, that this archaeologist, Sir Arthur Evans, who worked there for most of his career, he said that the plumbing is equal or in some ways better than our own. Now that,
wow.
You know, there was cement poured at that in southeast Turkey. So we don't know if there was cement found or poured at Crete to cover up that advanced plumbing. Who knows what's been
mm-hmm.
done to the plumbing at Crete, but it's been documented by this Toronto medical doctor and this archaeologist, Sir Arthur Evans. He died, I think he died in 41 at the age of 90, but he did write two books, but they're unfortunately out of print. But we do have this Dr. Corrigan's, was fascinated with the subject, and it's in the Canadian Journal of Medicine, you know, which is a scientific publication. So it's in a very prestigious journal all about this advanced plumbing.
Incredible.
They had a lot of advanced things. They back in antiquity that, again, as you pointed out, survive in the mythology. They're discounted as stories because we like to think that we're the pinnacle of evolution. And we like to think
that the reason? I was curious.
We're constantly moving forward. We're becoming more advanced. And if you have things from the past that contradict that, it's a danger to the people who would like us to believe otherwise. But antiquity had many advanced. The Antikythera device was more complex than a Swiss watch. And this was from antiquity, from the age of Alexander in early Rome. In Alexandria during the reign of the Ptolemies, they had animatronics, they had coin-dispensed drinks, so you can get like a hot beverage or a cold beverage by putting a coin in a slot. They had doors that opened and closed. They had statues that moved. And in the mythology, they had robots that patrolled the island.
Hercules, when did you first start to learn about this, and how did you get interested?
I'm Greek, and I went to Greek parochial school, so Greeks are very proud of their antiquity. So I learned about all this stuff in grammar school for years.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And the mythology contained, that's how I got interested in von Däniken, because anyone with a modern eye could see that they were describing, you know, robots and things like that. And we knew about the plumbing in Crete and how advanced the ancients were. Because, again, it was pride in the heritage. There's a lot of things. Like, for instance, they tell you that Schliemann discovered Troy, and nobody knew that Troy was there. Everybody in antiquity knew Troy was there because it was a vacation spot like Gettysburg. And somebody from my island wrote a guidebook on Troy in case you want to go on vacation there during Roman times. So, again, there's just a lot of untruths.
Wow.
I don't update untruths. And I'm glad that the ancient astronaut theory, the ancient alien theory, as they're calling it now, came up. If not that I buy every one of their explanations, but they are at least pointing to anomalous artifacts and lost cultures with technology far beyond what we credit. So we should be grateful for that.
Yes, definitely. Wow.
And you've done
Mary Jo also. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You've broken new ground with this series, Mary Jo. And so you're a pioneer in this particular area.
Well, you know, I think about it a lot. And here you invited Nick and I to do this. And, I mean, it just sort of occurred. And here we are. We're talking about the Eastern Mediterranean. And it's so much of it is there, you know. There's so it's so filled with these findings. I mean, it's amazing.
And we're learning more every single day. It's.
I think more and more is just going to start to turn up. I think we're just going to continue to find more and more evidence.
One more thing I wanted to just quickly mention is that you mentioned about the iridescent glass. And I remember walking through the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City and seeing in the Greek and also in the Roman area these incredible cups and I believe a vase that were totally iridescent and just caught my eye. And I thought, how in the world did they do this then? It just didn't seem possible. And again, you started exploring that and it just blew my mind of some of the findings that you had. And the other thing you mentioned too that was interesting is the fisherman statue with the intricate netting of a fisherman. And I thought, how in the world could I saw a picture of that and thought, how in the world could a sculptor sculpturing out of a hard granite ever in the million years come up with doing something like that? And we were
huge.
Talking
the
about
net,
advanced
the net
cement.
Is huge. Yeah, right. The net is very large. It's all over this fisherman. It's like over the top of his head. And for someone to carve that, it would be impossible.
Exactly. And so when you started talking about what was the research had come up with, again, that blew me away because when I'm seeing the statues at the Met, I'm thinking, how in the world did they do some of those amazing, intricate sculpture within the statues and
I felt
the fabrics?
The same way when I first read about it. I thought, oh, this is unbelievable. This is just so, I mean, it's just over the top.
It still is. It just blows me away that this finding, and again, it makes total sense, and mm-hmm. it kind of clears the air about how in the world did some of this take place, and there were scientific reasons, and they had not advanced knowledge to do something like this.
It was a mold.
Really amazing.
They poured the liquid into a mold, so they didn't mm-hmm. carve it. It was simply a... hardened, and they didn't have to worry about this stuff cracking or breaking off because they just filled a mold. It's just unbelievable.
It makes total sense when you have that perspective to realize that is what they were doing way back then, and we're just beginning to fathom how this was all done. It's an exciting time for research, for sure.
It is, and these architectural geometries. I mean, you know, we all pretty much took one geometry in high school, but now there's mm-hmm. all these separate geometries, very advanced, and nanoparticles are supposedly based on 45 geometries. So they're so advanced. You know, it's just
also,
something that is hard to comprehend.
It is. Also, in one of the studies, when they were studying what the chemtrails are made of and what's falling on our planet by way of spraying these mystery planes, and they found out that a lot of the chemicals being rained out on us are nanoparticles. And that's, in a way, very shocking because, as you know, nanoparticles are so small that they can go right through your skin. A human being or an animal
exactly.
or a plant.
Right.
Wow. I mean, that's something.
In other words, a human hair is very heavy compared to a nanoparticle.
Think of that.
Nanoparticles are almost, they're like molecule size. That's how small they are.
Right.
And
so how
right.
in the world could ancient people have any idea and the technology to even explore, let alone work with that. Again,
yes.
It just blows you away. Did some other entities, other beings from other realms of the universe come to our planet, visit it, and teach some of this technology? You can't not consider that as a possibility of part of this answer.
The other thing is that these Platonic solids and the Archimedean solids are so, they're the phases and the the mathematics involved in, they're like this Paolo Uccello, who created the tile on the floor at St. Mark's Basilica,
mm-hmm.
they're able to do that at a time when they didn't have a computer. So, you know, how did they do that?
Right. Again, it really just spins you around. And again, we have to rethink what was going on and explore more about the reality, which in a lot of cases, the evidence is still here. And we can mm-hmm. see it with our eyes and feel it with our hands and know that did happen. It exists. But how in the world did it get here? For what means? Who transmitted the information to be able to do any of this? Wow, amazing, absolutely amazing. I should add here, because we're going out of time, that if anyone in our audience would like to ask Mary Jo or myself a question or give us some information, we'd be very happy to hear from you. We absolutely would, and you're very welcome to contact us. The best way to do it is to do it through my email, and if it's for Mary Jo, I'll pass it on to her. My email address, I gave it before, but I'm going to give it one more time, is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, at gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1. At gmail.com, and we certainly welcome your questions and your comments. Hercules, how much more time do we have? I know it's getting short here.
We have around 4 minutes.
Mary Jo,
I just wanted to mention that I don't know if it's a summary really, but I wanted to mention that the palace at Susa and the ceramic tiles, it was hard for me to understand, really, when I first read the paper, but the color in the tile is not made with pigment. It's all based on optics or the light hitting the nanomaterial, which is
wow.
Is amazing. I mean, it's simply not pigment. It's something other. It's very, very advanced.
I got to see that. I have to save my money because I got to go there. I have got to see this with my own eyes. Absolutely. And I'm sure Hercules feels the same way.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to end and sum it up. So let's go, Mary Jo, to our ending. Okay. And what a great show, Mary Jo. Again, your research is amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And so here we go then. This is Nick Curto.
And Mary Jo Fahey for Connecting the Dots, wishing you all an enlightening journey.
As you connect the dots to seek truth.
Till next time, keep informed, stay healthy, and safe.
And be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye for now.
Much love to everyone out there. Stay safe and, hey, stay warm. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, and thank you so very much. Again, an excellent, thought-provoking show. Nick Curto will be recording tomorrow for our ET Entity Enigma show, and which will post on YouTube within a couple of days. And Mary Jo will be back in a couple of weeks.
We have our end of the month
show. To those listening, whether you called in and sat in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and a happy and healthy new year. Thanks again, guys.
Good night.
Much love to all. Good night.
Good night. And we'll close with Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal. But only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real.